And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Friday edition. Friday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. Have you seen any sunshine yet today? I'll tell you what, these weather forecasts are starting to drive me up a wall. You know, if it's going to be cloudy, just say cloudy, but don't tell me it's going to be sunny and it's not sunny, because that's a real disappointment. We were expecting mostly sunny all day. Is that still the forecast? Mostly sunny? They changed it? Well, somebody at the National Weather Service must have looked out the window, I guess. I don't know. So here we are, and I don't know how many times this has happened over the past few weeks where they predicted sunshine and we get nothing. More of the gray. Oh, well. Hey, it could be a heck of a lot worse this time of year. I don't have to tell you that. We're into January now, first weekend in January. My goodness, we could have snow and blowing and ice and temperatures in the single digits and everything else. So not too bad. Just a little disappointing. We were looking for something better here today. You know, we'll have to get a meteorologist on the program here sometime and see if there's an explanation for why we have so many cloudy days in the wintertime. When you think about it, man, we get a lot of cloudy days, don't we? You know, even if there's no precip, if it's not raining or snow, you get this cloud cover and it just won't go away. I don't know. Is that something to do with the lakes, Great Lakes? I don't know. Let's get a meteorologist on sometime and explore that. Open talk for a brief period here today before we chat with our first guest, 283-2525. We've been talking this week quite a bit about the new garbage contract for Butler Township. Some people are concerned and some are pretty upset with the new trash bins that people have in Butler Township and trying to get them in the right place every day. Some say they're too big to move around. Some say they don't have a place to put them at the end of the driveway where they're supposed to be. We've been talking about that. Also, we've had a couple of calls now on veterans in need. We had a call from a gentleman who wanted to donate some furniture to this program, and it kind of hit me cold. I've done a number of interviews with programs that aid veterans and homeless veterans and veterans returning from the Middle East and so on, and off the top of my head, I couldn't remember the details about this particular program, but I promised him that I would find out, and I did. If you're interested in this, if you have furniture items that you would be interested in donating to this program for our homeless vets, contact Butler County Veterans Services Office. That's John Cyprian in the County Government Center, right behind the courthouse. You can call there or stop in. And I talked to John this morning, as a matter of fact, and he said they're coordinating that. It's their program, Veterans in Need. And indeed, they have a warehouse space that they've rented where they can keep this donated furniture. And we've heard from a couple of veterans who say it's a great program. There was one gentleman called yesterday who said it was a real lifesaver for him. Got him over the hump and settled in. So if you're interested in that, particularly if you have items to donate, contact the Butler County Veterans Services Office. The phone number is 284-5352, but you can look it up in the phone book. It's Veterans Services, 724-284-5352. And I hope that answers the questions from several callers that we've had here over the past couple of days about that program. Someone called and said, you know, you interviewed somebody recently about this, and they couldn't be specific about when it was, and I knew it wasn't recently. I have talked about the program over the past year or so, but I didn't have that information available off the top of my head. So I hope that takes care of it for you. I hope so, anyway. And I hope you have a good weekend as we head here into the first weekend of January. Wow. Wow. First weekend in January. What was it like a year ago at this time? Oh, we had snow. We had cold. Yeah. And we're certainly going to get that over the next couple of months at some point. I'm not sure when. Temperatures are going to be fairly moderate over the weekend, even into Monday of next week, which takes us almost a week into January. But it'll be coming. Don't worry. We'll have plenty of time for the cold. Not like the olden days, though, right? Whenever we'd start to get snow in December, and seems like you always had snow at Christmas time to go sled riding or whatever. And once you had the snow cover, it seemed to stick around for the whole winter, you know? Boy, not anymore, that's for sure. 283-2525, our number. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing today?
Just fine. Nice to talk with you, my friend.
You too. Hey, Dave, I heard something the other day which sounded kind of strange, and I thought, you know, you might have an answer. You might, you know, when you talk to the mayor and city council, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
This fellow said that he heard somewhere that in Butler County, the highest property taxes were being paid by or for the Butler prison that's in Butler City. You ever hear anything like that?
The only thing that I've heard recently in the news is that the prison is the biggest single expense for Butler County government in the coming year. The commissioners just approved their budget. No county property tax hike, by the way. It stays the same. But the biggest single expense for Butler County next year will be operating the prison. It's about $12.5 million, what it costs to operate the prison.
Okay. Yeah, maybe he misunderstood that or whatever, because I was thinking, well, wait a minute. I mean, you know, Butler County taxpayers, I would think, you know, funded the building of the prison. And it got me thinking, are there other, you know, government buildings that we're paying taxes on and basically getting double dipped?
No, not that. I would imagine there's a bond issue that's being paid off to build the prison, and there's also, you know, there's costs. I mean, you got to pay the prison guards, there's food, there's medical expenses, you know, operating a prison.
All right.
Is expensive.
Yeah, I understand that. They have no problem with it. I mean, just like, you know, we all pay property taxes, you know, as individuals. I mean, you know, and, you know, we're always told how transparent the government is, and
well, I think
all I see is, you know, that I can't trust you people at all.
Well, I think your friend may have been...
So it would be nice to know, get that cleared up, you know, sometime.
I think your friend may have been a little confused, that's all.
Right, right, but I'm still saying, you know, I'd rather hear it from a politician, you know, make it very clear that that's not what's happening.
Okay. Thanks, my friend.
Have a good one.
Good to talk with you. 283-2525, Open Talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello?
Dave?
Yes. Hello. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay. Dave, I don't know. I don't keep accurate records of them, but on my calendar, I had marked that last year on this date, it was -6 degrees.
Well, I know it was bitterly cold. I can guarantee you that. I don't keep that sort of records, but...
Well, I didn't expect it would, and I don't know how accurate mine were. That's the only temperature I have written on last year's calendar.
Well, the most of the month of January last year, certainly the first half of it, was bitterly cold. I mean, we had heavy snow. We had all kind of school delays, many, many days of school delays and cancellations during that month of January last year. It was brutal.
Well...
Who knows?
No guarantees about this one.
Yeah, we may have it yet, but so far so good, huh? Knock on wood.
Well, Dave, I just wanted to mention that, and I don't know if anybody else could call in or confirm that or not, but I was surprised when I looked at the calendar. Well, I was changing calendars,
mm-hmm.
and I happened to glance and see that, and I was very surprised.
Do you write those sort of notes on your calendar on a regular basis, or?
No, that's the only two. I just had two of them, and they were the 5th and the 6th of January. Those are the only two I had.
All right, my friend. Hey, thanks a lot. Good to talk with you.
Okay, Dave. Thanks. Bye.
Sure. We'll take a break. We're scheduled to chat with our first guest today, Ehud Diskin. You're on It's Your Turn on WISR. He'll be talking with us by telephone. So stick around. After these words, we will be right back.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Have the thoughts of becoming a caregiver for your parents been on your mind a lot lately? Maybe you're thinking about your own life in a few years. Pretty overwhelming, and you don't know where to turn. Let me suggest attorney Michael Pater. He handles each account like they were his own mom and dad. For elder law issues, wills, power of attorney, living wills, trusts, and more, call attorney Michael Pater at the Handicap Accessible Morgan Center, downtown Butler, at 287-7724. Representing individuals, families, and businesses for over 26 years is attorney Michael Pater, 287-7724.
Get ready for a great history lesson, folks, and a pretty good read, on a book entitled Lone Wolf in Jerusalem. The author is Ehud Diskin, and he joins us here on the It's Your Turn program on WISR by telephone for this segment. I'm Dave Malarkey. Ehud Diskin, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us, sir.
Nice to be with you and with your audience.
I fear that a lot of listeners, especially today, a couple of generations now past the founding of the State of Israel, are really not too familiar with the history of the country. Actually, we celebrated an anniversary, did we not, for 1948, right?
Right, 70 years.
Yeah. The story that you write, and again, this is historical fiction, but it is based on what actually happened at the time, about the same time, I guess, as the novel Exodus by Leon Uris, correct?
It's about the same time. It's about the same time.
Well, folks might be familiar with that book or perhaps with the movie. It was a great movie made from that book, starring Paul Newman, as I recall. Tell us a little bit about your background, Ehud Diskin. You were a colonel in the Israeli Defense Force, if my information is correct.
Yeah, I was a colonel. I was also in three wars, all of them against Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a major in the reserve, I was the operation officer of a brigade of tanks, that we were the first one to cross the Suez Canal in the Yom Kippur War, 1973.
Mm-hmm.
It was a division that the commander was General Ariel Sharon. Later he became the Prime Minister. And like every war, it was tough, but so, if people they don't remember, so... Syria and Egypt, they attacked Israel, and Israel had to protect itself.
I mentioned.
So I had a very interesting army because I was also at the headquarters, and so it was interesting. Sometimes it was tough, not only interesting, but...
I mentioned at the outset of our conversation that I fear many listeners aren't familiar with the story of Israel's fight for freedom. After World War II ended, and of course we had the horrors of the Holocaust, Israel had to fight for its freedom. And if you're not familiar with the story, folks, you might be surprised to know that they were fighting against the British. The British, for goodness sakes. Well, tell us a little bit about that, Ehud. The British had what they called the British Mandate in Palestine, if I remember my history correctly.
Yeah, you remember it very correctly. It's what we have to think about, that Israel, like America, they had to get rid of the British.
Mm-hmm.
Same what happened here in America. And I'm talking now from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So what happened? People, not everyone is interesting in history just to read it. It's dry history. Some people, yes. So I thought to myself, it's an important period that people, they don't know so much about it and they are not aware what happened. I want to bring the history in through an interesting story, and the fact that it became a bestseller in Israel, it shows that it was an interesting story. By the way, it's now on Amazon. It's also a bestseller for Jewish literature. So It shows that here also the English version, people, the readers, they like it. And my aim was to tell the history in an interesting way. And with your permission, if I can read an email that I received from one of the readers, it shows what really happened, and this is what I thought that I wished it would happen. So is it okay to read an, not a long one?
Absolutely. Please go right ahead, sir.
Dear Ehud, my name is Ksenia. And I'm sorry, I have to say my book was translated also to Russian.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dear Ehud, my name is Ksenia. Couple of weeks ago, I have been to the representation of your book, Lone Wolf in Jerusalem, that took place in Babel, Tel Aviv. I bought the book that day, and you even signed it for me, which I appreciated a lot. I read this book in 2 days, thanks to espresso and sleepless nights, but did not want to bother you with my letters. Meanwhile, I am still under great impression, and that's the reason why I cannot help writing you a letter of thanks. Despite the fact that this is not a book of history, it helped me to put everything in its place, in my head, and forced to change my point of view to Israel itself. The miracle of the fact that the state appeared at all the difficulties, losses and pain people had to go through in order it to happen. It's not that I didn't know it before, but the book touched some deeper layers of my soul. I went through thousands of emotions while reading those pages, and I just wanted to say thank you for that. It was great. Best regards, Ksenia. So, you see what I mean, that people, they learned the history, but it was... She didn't sleep tonight, you know, she mm-hmm. couldn't put the book down.
Mm-hmm.
So that what was my aim, and I'm glad that I was successful achieving it.
We're chatting, listeners, if you've joined us a few minutes late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Ehud Diskin, author of Lone Wolf in Jerusalem. This is historical fiction which tells the true story of the fight by guerrillas to create the State of Israel following World War II. And I want to have Ehud to talk a little bit about his characters, but let me set the stage first of all. We mentioned the British Mandate. After World War II, the British were in control of Palestine. And believe it or not, they curtailed immigration of Jews fleeing the war. And that led to a guerrilla war. And a rather small group of individuals were able to set the British running from the Middle East. And that, of course, set the stage for the creation of the State of Israel. Your character, the main character in your book, is David Gabinsky. Ehud, tell us a little bit about David Gabinsky.
First of all, I see that you did your homework. Okay? Know the history and you know about the book. I wanted to tell the history through the characters, and the main character, the hero, is, you're right, it's David Gabinsky. And I choose Ghetto Minsk because this was a ghetto that suffered a lot through World War II. And David Gabinski, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but just mainly, he lived there with his family. His family was killed, and he became a partisan like other Jews at this time. And they fought the British, and after the war, he immigrated to Israel, to Jerusalem. He wanted to fulfill his father's wishes, but at this time, the British, they prevented the Jews to come. They allowed only like 10,000 Jews to immigrate to Israel every year, and there were hundreds of thousands that they wanted to go to Israel. They survived the Holocaust, and they didn't have where to live, and they wanted to go to their homeland and to establish a state. So in Israel, he found, he thought it will be okay, but then he saw what happens, that he has to help to fight the British. And it was a bitter fight. It's also a lot of romanticism in this book. It's not only fighting. He fell in love with Shoshana, a beautiful lady, that she had some emotional problems because of the war. I'm not going to tell all the story, but so it's also, it's not just wars and fighting. It's a lot of it's a romantic story, and in the end, of course, everyone knows the end of the story, that Israel succeeded to get rid of the British, and also in the United Nations to get a Jewish state, and one of the countries that helped a lot to Israel to become a state was America, you know, with Truman, that was a president.
Did your experience as a colonel in the Israeli Defense Force help you in creating the characters in this book, Ehud?
Yeah, it helped me. You see, I don't want to say, to give compliment to myself, I have a good imagination, and all the events here, I described in the book, I saw it in my mind, you know, all the fighting, all the situations, and this is why the book is also sold today on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and in stores. So if you read the reviews and the feedbacks on Amazon, also it was in the media, same. People, they say, they recommend that it will be a movie, because it's very real. You see, when you read it, it's you saw also what this lady, she wrote, this Russian lady, you see it very alive, you know, the story, the story here. The characters, they are fictional characters, but the history here is very real and very precise.
How long did the guerrilla war against the British last? World War II ended in 1945, and the State of Israel was created in 1948, so it must have been a relatively brief conflict. I'm correct on that, sir?
The struggle with the British began even through in World War II.
Oh, okay, so it started
in the beginning of the 40s, uh-huh. Maybe even in the end of the 30s, because also during World War II, the British didn't allow Jews to come, and it was also Arabic countries around, they were against Israel, and Israel had to protect itself. You know, if we are talking about the history, in 1929, in Hebron, it was a massacre of the Arabs killed, I think, about 70 Jews, their neighbors, and so on, without a reason, just because they were Jews. And the population, the Jewish population, they had to protect themselves. So they established at this time already the underground in order to protect themselves. And later, this underground that was established years before, they helped to get rid of the British.
Do some of the real-life characters in the history of the State of Israel at this time appear in your book? I mean, obviously you have the fictional characters of David Gabinsky and Shoshana, but do people like David Ben-Gurion, for example, appear in your book, Ehud?
Yeah, David Ben-Gurion and Menachem Begin. And in some way, I didn't want, you see, the history, I wanted to tell it in the right way. So when someone finished reading the book, he knows the history, he knows what happened. But as I said, the history characters, they are real. And with your permission, I want to tell you a short story that it will maybe show what I'm talking about.
Oh, I would love for you to do that. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. I had a book launch in Israel, and I wanted to invite from all the undergrounds, representatives. So, let's say most of them, they died. It was 70, 75 years ago. And from the largest underground was at this time the Haganah. And the commander of the Haganah, his name was Moshe Sneh. And his son, Ephraim Sneh, I invited him. He was a general in the army. He was a minister a few times. So I sent him the book. I invited him. And he sent me an email. And he said, thank you very much. And I'm sorry, I'll be busy. I will be abroad. I cannot come. I felt it's a kind of an excuse, but it's okay. I found another general that he was in the Haganah also at this time. He was someone in his 90s already and invited him. 2 days before the book launch, I got an email from this general, Ephraim Sneh, and he said, listen, I just returned back today from Poland, and I read your book while I was on the train. It's in Poland. And first of all, it's a fascinating book, and it's a very good book. But what I wanted to tell you, that you are one of the only ones that wrote the real history about my father. I wrote about his father like few lines. I didn't write, as I said, I didn't want that... It will be too much of stories here. And he said, I'm going to come to the book launch and to say it. And he came and he gave a speech and he mentioned it. So the history, I tried that the history will be very precise. Because when you read about the history, also today, everyone sees the history in a different way. You read about a certain event at this time, of in the 1940s. So if someone from the one underground is describing it, it's one story. Another member of another underground, it's another story. And you have to decide what is really the real story. So I tried, and you see in this case, I was successful.
We're chatting, listeners, with Ehud Diskin, the author of a historical fiction, exciting, really, story, Lone Wolf in Jerusalem is the title. I must tell you, Mr. Diskin, that I recently reread for the second time House on Garibaldi Street, which is the story of the capture of Adolf Eichmann and bringing him to justice in Israel. It's been in the news. There's been a new film version coming out, and I decided that I would go back and reread The House on Garibaldi Street. The Israeli Mossad, the Secret Service, played a key role in finding and locating Adolf Eichmann and bringing him to justice. Did the underground that the guerrillas that were formed to fight the British and create Israel, did that kind of set the stage for the Mossad, the Secret Service in Israel? I have to think that it did.
Yeah, what was at this time, it was the same name, and I'm writing about it in the book, the organization that smuggled the immigrants to Israel, and it was very complicated. They had to hide it and to smuggle the people. Their name was Mossad, Le'aliyah Bet, Mossad, mainly the Mossad. This was part of the Mossad, so it was the Mossad. It was another. They acted in another way, but this was the base for the Mossad, and it's true. They didn't do spying and et cetera, but they smuggled Jews from Europe to Israel, and the British, they fought. They put like warships around the shores of Israel, and it was complicated to bring people in. One of the stories that I'm bringing in the book, that they smuggled immigrants through Lebanon, not through the beaches of Israel. So the Mossad existed, but in another form of action at this time.
We must also remember, listeners, for those of you who are not familiar with the history of the State of Israel, not only was it a guerrilla fight to drive the British out, as is depicted in Ehud Diskin's book, but immediately after the announcement of the creation of the State of Israel by David Ben-Gurion, it was that very same day, was it not, Mr. Diskin, that the neighboring Arab states declared war on Israel, the very day that the state of the nation was announced?
Yeah. I want to quote many people that heard about it, Ibn Evan, that he was also the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Israel. He said that the Arab, the Palestinian, they never missed an opportunity to miss peace, because the United Nations, they decided to give freedom to for an Israeli state, and they gave also to the Palestinian certain freedom, etc., etc. And they missed it, say, no way it will be a Jewish state, and not only the Palestinian, but all the Arabic countries around, they attacked Israel. And I'm mentioning it in the book, that the evaluation of, it was not the CIA, I don't remember, it was an organization before it, the CIA this time, it was a formal evaluation that Israel is going to lose the war against the Arabs, because there were few countries, many millions of people. In Israel there were only 800,000 Jews. And the formal evaluation of the United States was that if the Arabic countries will join this war, Israel will lose. But it was really, I'm not writing about it in this book, maybe in my next book, but because they were heroes, all these people. I want to say also the people that I'm mentioning, the Jews at this time, the underground members, in my eyes, they were really heroes. Because today, let's say the Israeli army, everyone that in the age of 18, he has to join the army. At these days, all these underground members, they could sit quietly, they live their life, but it's not. And they were ready to sacrifice their life, and there are a lot of stories of heroism, which I'm mentioning in the book, of these people, that they were really patriots and ready to sacrifice everything, and this is why Israel exists today. And many people, they don't know about it. when you read, for example, this reaction of this lady, she said, I knew the history, but I didn't know about it. And as I said, you should also the feedback someone can see in Amazon, the book is successful there. And I want to mention something else. The English version of the book is even a better version of the Hebrew book, the original bestseller book, because first of all, I had a good translator, and we did 4 editing to the book, and the last editor, Tess Mallory from Texas, she did such a great job, and if someone wants to read, I don't want to talk too much about the book, we have also a website and a Facebook, www.lonewolfinjerusalem.com, so people can read more about the book.
It's a thrilling tale, listeners, of love, loss, revenge in the British Mandate era Israel, set primarily in post-World War II Israel. Again, the title is Lone Wolf in Jerusalem by our guest here on It's Your Turn on WISR for the past few minutes, Ehud Diskin. Mr. Diskin, nice to meet you. Thanks for sharing time with us here today. Great to talk with you, sir.
Nice to be with you and with your audience, and all the best.
All right, and you too. So long now.
So long.
When the time comes, the last thing you need to concern yourself with is planning the funeral. It's the wrong time, your time of grieving, when your emotions come to the surface. You just can't think straight. You just can't. Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you pre-plan the funeral. Make all of the choices now while you're still emotionally able to. The funeral service, the casket, which minister, priest, or rabbi, cremation, visitations, flowers, church services or not. All of these decisions. Avoid all of that. Pre-plan now. Make those decisions now while you can think clearly and rationally. Think about it, and then talk it over with us at Thompson Miller. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or www.thompson-miller.com. Pre-arrangement. It really makes sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Coming up in a moment, our next guest on It's Your Turn for a Friday will be chatting with Walt Gregg. One of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler. Have you tried them yet? They're really good. It's your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They package your items for shipping, and what a great convenience that is. You can ship any way you want, U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS. They package it up and ship it out for you. They also have copying service, scanning, faxing. You can rent a temporary mailbox there. I have greeting cards, even an official notary. They're at 140 Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants, just off Newcastle Road here in Butler. Phone 724-841-0044 for Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Going to be talking about a new thriller, folks, a novel. It's quite an interesting, actually, a little bit scary proposition. Our guest joins us by telephone today. He is Walt Gregg, and we're going to be talking about his thriller, The Red Line. First of all, Walt Gregg, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Great to be with you, Dave. I'm thrilled you asked me to be on.
Oh, happy to. And I found out about, was actually talking to your publicist about your book, and he just began to describe the premise about the start of World War III, and I said, "Oh boy, I want to talk to that gentleman," and and that is the that's the main plot line of your military thriller, the start of World War III. As I mentioned earlier, kind of a sobering proposition, huh?
Yeah, I've had a lot of readers come back to me and say, "Boy, I love this book, but you scared me."
Yeah. Well, who are the the main combatants, who are the chief opponents? Of course, in World War II, we had Germany and Italy and eventually Japan teaming up against the Allied powers. What's the situation in your novel, The Red Line?
Well, the situation is after the Second Cold War fails, Russia and America end up going to war. Mm. And it takes place in Germany.
And how does it start? What you know, when you look back at history, especially World War One. How silly that a world war started and so many lives were lost over something that was really just a small event in one of the Balkan countries. What's the triggering mechanism for your war, the Red Line?
Well, it's kind of a complex scenario, but basically I have Putin deposed by a neo-communist dictator, a Stalinist-type dictator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly not a world expert in Russian history or government, but I've had a few courses in it, and I served at United States Command, European Command Headquarters in Germany in the middle of the First Cold War, so I've certainly got some insight into Russia. And obviously they're right now feeling quite uncomfortable about having lost the buffer they had between a very powerful Western world and them, you know, based on World War II and the 20 million Russians killed by the Germans. They're not real happy. And I think there's a desire to, I don't know, reconstitute the Soviet Union, possibly bring back a lot of the countries that they had in the Warsaw Pact. That's kind of an impression I get.
Mm-hmm.
So this dictator slowly but surely does that. And because of the history with Germany, he decides he's got to do one more thing. He's got to split Germany again. He's got to split the East Germany away from West Germany. And when he attempts a revolt there, it backfires on him. And the neo-Nazis actually come to power in Germany, and a new Nazi nation is born. So the Russian dictator feels he has no choice but to launch a sneak attack to paralyze his mortal enemy and destroy them. And unfortunately, the undermanned Americans are standing in the way.
Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're chatting with Walt Gragg. He is not only retired from a number of years in the military, but he's also an attorney. And we'll talk a little bit about his background momentarily here. But we're discussing his novel, The Red Line. It's a military thriller. And obviously part of your service in the military figures prominently into the background of your novel, Walt, because you served in Germany for at least a period, didn't you, while you were in the Army?
Right. I was there for 38 months, and like I said, I was actually stationed at European Command Headquarters, which is in Stuttgart. It's still there, and was part of NATO. We were the American portion of NATO. The commander of NATO was also the commander of our outfit, and so we were very much involved in planning how to defend the West from a possible Soviet Union attack in the First Cold War. So I got to see a lot of stuff, and I participated in a lot of very high-level, theater-level war games that gave me a lot of ideas on what we were concerned about, what we feared, what our strengths were, what their strengths were. And I kind of put it together in a book.
Some listeners, especially those of younger generations, may not realize just how many American military personnel are still stationed in Germany, well over 70 years after after World War II. We still have a lot of bases there, don't we?
We do. Ramstein Air Base, of course, is the biggest. When I was there, of course, we had 300,000 soldiers and airmen in Germany, and I want to say about six or seven air bases, two armored divisions, some other armored battalions, all kinds of things. And yet, when we were there, even with 300,000 soldiers, we knew we had no chance should the Russians ever launch a full-scale, massive armored attack across the border. It was a very interesting perspective. I didn't meet a single soldier the entire time I was there who believed we would be victorious or would survive, and that was actually reflected in the war games I played. We were consistently on the short end of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so not only, if we're thinking of this possibility, horrendous although it may be, even to imagine if Russia would suddenly strike Germany. It would not only be the potential collapse of Germany that we would fear, but we have all these Americans there who, you know, most likely would, most of them would be killed if the Russians launched a sneak attack. So that's kind of the hidden thing here in terms of the Russians launching a surprise attack. And in your novel, it is a surprise attack, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I don't know how realistic my scenario is, but I did my best to provide a way for the Russians to attack without us being fully prepared. And so that makes it, it allows, you know, my focus was on the individual soldiers. That's really what is the most important thing in any war, are the people. And it allowed me to show the strengths and abilities of individual American soldiers and airmen. I think that was a really nice part of the book. You know, as I say, I put ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances and let the chips fall where they may in the book. And yeah, that was, it was rough on, if this were to happen, it'd be very rough on those guys.
You use the cover of a powerful blizzard in Germany to cover the Russian tanks thundering down the Autobahn so that the sneak attack can come off. I'm intrigued with the comparison. I'm fairly well read on the European theater of World War II, and weather was a factor in the D-Day invasion. First of all,
Even more so. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dave, but even more so in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, in terms of D-Day, Eisenhower, as a Supreme Allied Commander, actually had to delay the planned D-Day invasion by one day. It was supposed to be June 5th, and they delayed it to June 6th because of bad weather. And on the German side, spread out in the defenses along the coast of Normandy, they thought the weather was too bad for an invasion. So they kind of let their guard down, and some of the top generals actually left the front. And then, of course, for the Battle of the Bulge, it was one of the worst winters ever. That took place December, January 1944 and 1945, if I remember my dates correctly. Horrible, horrible weather. So when I was reading, I thought that parallel jumped up at me right away. You used the cover of a blizzard for the sneak attack. Pretty good stuff, Walt.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's getting, the book's getting rave reviews. Publishers Weekly, which is the big industry magazine, actually gave it the highest review possible. It's a review they only give to about 1 out of 100 books. And in fact, they liked the book so well that they actually followed up about 6 weeks later with a 2-page interview with me, which is really rare for a new writer. So far, so good. But yeah, I love weather in my books. It's another character to me. It's just an added character to bring in the weather. And it just, to me, it makes for a very interesting read to have these guys not only struggling to stop Russian tanks, but to fight their way through a blizzard.
Tell me a little bit about, you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, some of the war games that you participated in when you were stationed in Germany. What sort of scenarios? I mean, are you able to talk about that? Did they say, okay, this is what's going to happen. How would you respond? Is that what these war games were all about?
Exactly. And of course, being that I was at a headquarters level, I was fortunate enough to not be actually slogging around in the mud during those 3 years, but that's exactly what they would do, is they would generate, it was almost like the precursor to video games, I guess you'd say. They would come up with a scenario, and then you'd have to respond. I was responsible for 400 long-line communication facilities in Europe, all the way from Iceland to, in those days, Iran. We had a site in Tehran. And so they would do something like, all Russian saboteurs just destroyed this communication site, and then I'd have to respond, coming up with a way to overcome that, or things like that. And so we would kind of come up with our answer, feed that in, and then we'd get more feedback back, and we'd just work through this. This would be multiple days long.
Mm-hmm. So you were privy to many of
the elements of the actual American plan for the defense of Germany in the worst-case scenario.
Yeah, yeah, and a lot of that sort of found its way in the book. Obviously, there were things I couldn't talk about in there, but, you know, we tried to write the book on a really kind of basic level that makes, even though it's a very complicated story, it's a very simple read, I think. I hope. That's what readers tell me. And so, yeah, we tried to present the reality of it. And one of the interesting things that people don't realize, I know you probably saw that I mentioned just literally thousands upon thousands of deaths of German civilians and Russian soldiers and American soldiers. And that would be the reality. The fighting, the most interesting thing about this is, unlike, say, World War II, where for the most part, the fighting was in stages. You would fight for a couple of weeks, and then you may back off for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
But in this war, it would literally be nonstop. If you were an American soldier on the front lines, you would not get 1 second to breathe. You would be under attack every moment of every day. It would be relentless, and that's what kind of it's a kind of war people haven't seen before, so I think they would find that interesting in the book.
We need to take a quick break. We have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with Walt Gregg, author of The Red Line. We'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. The After Christmas Sale is now in progress at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. They got some great buys there. 20% off their entire stock of shoes, boots, and slippers. Big savings. Big savings throughout the store. Yeah. Shoes, boots, slippers, overshoes. You know, we're still going to get bad weather, sloppy weather. We haven't had too much yet, but we're going to get it. Now's a chance to pick up some good buys. Also, 15% off their entire stock of women's SAS comfort shoes. And you always get that great fit that Miller's is famous for, that good price, that great selection, and a friendly smile from the Ciprians, too. Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. They've been there for more than 125 years. Miller's Shoes. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey, and you're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Our guest to this segment joins us by telephone. He is Walt Gregg, author of a new military thriller, The Red Line, a novel that imagines what would happen if Russia launched a surprise attack on Germany. I suppose, Walt, there are people, younger generations especially, who might kind of scoff at this and say, well, how is that going to happen? You really need to understand the long-term history of these two nations, Germany and Russia. They've been at loggerheads many times in the past with countless deaths on both sides.
Yeah, Dave, you know, you and I lived through times that younger folks just can't even imagine. Even back to when we were small children in school, I remember probably all the way back to first grade where our teachers multiple times a year would call an alert and we'd dive under our desk and put our little hands over our head as if that was going to stop an atomic bomb from killing us. So our view of the Soviet Union, of the first Cold War, is not theoretical at all. It's very realistic.
You mentioned earlier in our conversation the Second Cold War. Do you consider that to be our current era, or is this something that you were imagining for your novel, Walt?
I actually envisioned it happening. I actually began writing this novel in 1994, and things looked all nice and rosy with Russia, but I kind of knew better, and so I imagined it happening even that far back. I don't think we're quite there yet, but there are certainly elements around the edges that are hinting at it, and I really kind of expect it to happen. I'm hopeful it doesn't, but fearful that it will.
Yeah, there are certainly some parallels between your novel and our current geopolitical climate. In fact, there are even some who have suggested, talking about Vladimir Putin now, that he may have in the back of his mind the reestablishment of the Soviet Empire, just as you have in your novel, the new Soviet leader doing.
Yeah, I think, Dave, if you go back and you look at Russian history and look at it from their perspective, you know, over 20 million Russians, that's a conservative number, died in World War II at the hands of the Germans. And I think that scar runs very deep. And, you know, during the first Cold War, they felt a little better about the West simply because they had the buffer of the Eastern European countries, the Warsaw Pact, between them and Germany and the rest of the West. But that's gone. NATO's right on their doorstep, and I really think the taking of the Crimea a couple of years ago was just step one in what's about to come.
Yeah. A little bit about our guest, listeners. Walt Gregg lives in Texas, Austin area. I mentioned he's an attorney. Prior to law school, he was in the military for some years, and we've talked about his time in Germany, about 3 years, which he uses as background for his novel, The Red Line. A little bit about your writing of this book. You say you started it back in the 1990s. Did it take a long time to come to fruition or to get published? Talk a little bit about that, Walt.
Well, you know, I was told by an excellent writer friend that getting published is a marathon, not a sprint, and she's absolutely right. It took me probably a year to scratch out the story, and a couple of years after that to actually get it where it was satisfactory enough to start pushing it. And I almost sold it to the very same editor who ended up buying it. In 1997, I almost sold it to the same editor who bought it in 2014.
Huh.
And I was real lucky. Yeah, I was real lucky. He is an absolute legend. He's Tom Clancy's editor at Penguin Random House, and we got really lucky there. And he just loved the story the first time he read it, and his publisher ended up turning it down. Russia wasn't hot in 1997. It is now. He just loved the story. And I think everyone's commented that one of the things they love is I actually didn't write a techno thriller. There are elements of that, but I really watered that down because I wanted to broaden the audience. I want to make this a book that everybody could enjoy and get some perspective from. And so far, that's worked wonderfully. Women and men both, a very wide readership, has come back with nothing but outstanding comments about it. So we've succeeded a lot here. It took a long time, but, you know, patience is a virtue. And I think I'm still trying to learn that, but it's coming.
You mentioned this is not filled with a lot of technical jargon and that sort of thing. In fact, you mentioned in the first part of our conversation that you think the secret is talking about people, concentrating on people. And you have an unlikely hero in your novel, The Red Line. He's an Army staff sergeant. His name is George O'Neill. Tell us, Walt Gregg, a little bit about George O'Neill.
Well, actually, as you know, Dave, I ended up writing five different stories so I could tell the whole war. No one soldier could see the whole war. George was just one of them, and he is a communication specialist like I was in Germany, and he just ends up, as the Americans are desperately holding up, and their command and control has been absolutely crippled by Russian sabotage. He ends up coming up with a plan to at least give us a chance. And I don't want to tell your readers whether he succeeds or not and whether the Americans succeed or not. They need to find that out on their own. But he's not the only great story in there, I don't think. We've got a great platoon sergeant who's in the 1st Cavalry Platoon at the border that's hit by the Russians, and his desperate efforts to stop them and to save as many of his men as he can. And we've got a neat little airman at Ramstein Air Base who's behind a machine gun on a distant fence trying to stave off thousands of Russian paratroopers. And we've got a Patriot missile team, a man and a woman. We've got a M1 tank commander in the 3rd Infantry, and all those stories just kind of intertwine to put together a view of the entire war. So I people seem to like it. We'll see.
One of the reviews I read of your book, The Red Line, said, if you're a Tom Clancy fan, you'll love this. Did you like Tom Clancy, Walt?
I did. I read probably the first five books, and after that, kind of lost interest in him. I don't really follow it now, and I certainly don't write anything like him. I remember saying to my editor, that when I started out, I wanted to be the first me, not the tenth Tom Clancy. Hmm. But I enjoy the genre quite a bit. But I'm very minimal in my description. Tom Clancy was very detailed in everything he described. I figure readers have imaginations; they'll fill in the blanks where I left them the room to do so. So I'm much more focused on the action and on the people, and a whole bunch less on the description.
Well, some pretty good testimonials. John Batchelor of the John Batchelor Show, it's a nationally syndicated talk show, said your book, The Red Line, reads brilliantly. And John Land on the USA Today said, riveting and relentless. The title is The Red Line, a new novel, and it's going great guns early after publication by Walt Gragg, G-R-A-G-G. Hey, Walt, it's been a delight talking to you. You got a real page-turner here. Thanks for chatting with us here today.
Oh, absolutely, Dave. Thank you so much.
Sure. So long now. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on thinking about you? Mr. Golden Hair Surprise, and I just can't live without you. Can't you see it in my eyes? I've been one poor correspondent, and I've been too hard to find. But it doesn't mean you ain't been on my mind. Will you?
WISR 680, your classic hit station in Butler, will now conduct a test of the emergency alert system. This system is designed to provide you necessary information in the event of severe weather or a local emergency situation. This is only a test. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system here on WISR Butler.
Like a man on a fuzzy tree. My friends say I'm acting wild as a bug. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, my hands are shaking and my knees are weak. I can't seem to stand on my own two feet. Who do you think of when you have such luck? I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, me what's on my mind. I'm a little mixed up, gonna feel fine when I'm near the girl that I love best. My heart beats so it scares me to death when she touches my hand. Oh, what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot.
I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. My tongue gets tied when I try to speak. My insides shake like a leaf on a tree. There's only one cure for this body of mine. That's to have that girl and her love so fine. She touched my head and what a chill I got. Her lips are like a volcano that's hot. I'm proud to say that she's my buttercup. I'm in love, I'm all shook up. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, ooh, yeah, yeah. I'm all shook up.
The Knock Knights get back to section play this Friday night, and WISR is there. Hi, everyone. This is Scott Briggs inviting you to join me as it's Yawk at Knock. The Yawk Cougars come to town to take on the Knights Friday night. We'll have all the action beginning at about 7:15 with a tip-off slated for 7:30. Knock basketball here on WISR presented in part by the Butler Health System, Butler County District Attorney Rich Goldinger, Heffron Tillison agent Mike McKee, Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, the law firm of Dillon McCandless, King, Coulter, and Graham, Troy Allen Chevrolet and Slippery Rock, and Troy Allen Buick and Katanning, and the John W. Thrower Cement Corporation. It's Knock Basketball this Friday night right here on WISR, WISR680.com, and the Trib Live High School Sports Network.
Believe. Beach Boys and Surfer Girl on WISR. We're going to check lottery numbers next. Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 7777. The pick 3 is 489489. The pick 4 is 7203. The pick 5 is 14416. The wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt is 2, 4, 5, 19, and 25. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $45,000. Estimated jackpot for tonight's Mega Millions is over $40 million. We're going to have CBS News coming up for you in about 12 minutes from now, followed by some local news headlines.
Thank you. only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall I stay? Would it be a sin if I can't help falling in love with you? Like a river flows surely to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love.
Thank you.
This is WISR Butler,